see that thing I posted on Facebook with the movie fonts? You're listening to Cinema Jaw, the greatest movies podcast ever, recorded on location at the original Mother's Nightclub in Chicago. My name is Matt Kay, and with me is...
Rye the Movie Guy, and this week on Cinema Jaw, Matt, we put the pen to the paper as we discuss our top five favorite movies about writers.
Yeah, the best thing I can write these days is a tweet, Rye.
Yes.
140 characters.
You are down to 140 characters at best.
Yeah, I used to write a lot. I used to write a lot, but not so much these days.
And you know, movies and writers, there are a ton of them out there. There's screenwriters, poets, writers. It's a topic that comes up in movies constantly, especially Woody Allen movies.
Absolutely. Behind every great story is a great writer, and sometimes great stories are also about great writers. So we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, and joining us in a little while, great guest to cover that topic, Stephen Markley, does a column in the Red Eye each Monday mornings and also has published a book called... publish this book, is going to be joining us to discuss his top five favorite movies about writers.
Yeah, last time Stephen was on was back in episode 88, man, which was almost a full year ago. It was right after my birthday last year. So
been a long time. Can't wait to get Stephen back here. And besides that, of course, we are going to be looking at a review of The Dark Knight Rises. Matt, you haven't even seen it.
You know what? Wait a second. I've had a busy week.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I've had a busy week. And honestly, man, I'm not going to lie. The shooting thing, it kind of put me off this. I mean, we got to at least acknowledge that that happened.
Yeah, of course we're going to acknowledge that it happened. It was terrible.
I think I would have gone out and seen it had it not been for that, but that happened and I wasn't in a rush, and then I had this crazy busy week. So yeah, you and Steven are going to have to talk about this one. I'll listen though.
Yeah, and Matt, you can't let the terrorists and the psychos win put you in fear to going out to one of America's greatest pastimes of going to the movies.
You know,
so get out there and see it.
I agree 100%. 100%. So I will.
So Steven saw The Dark Knight Rises. We're going to talk about that. Also, I got a DVD review of Into the Abyss, Werner Herzog, and also John Carter.
Cool. And I caught up with you and I saw Jeff, Who Lives at Home, last night. So we can talk about that a little bit, too.
Awesome. Plus, you versus Steven in movie trivia and a cinema war that takes a look at who's the better Batman, Christian Bale or Michael Keaton.
That's going to be a tough one, man.
Ooh, boy. Jam-packed Cinema Jaw. So we bring in our guest. He has been here before. Stephen Markley, columnist at the Red Eye. Welcome to Cinema Jaw.
What's happening, guys?
It's been a long time since we've seen you.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to be back. You know I love talking about movies, so this is going to be great, yeah.
You do. Now, in case some of the Jawheads didn't listen to episode 88, and they should.
They should, yeah.
Yes. Tell us a little bit about how you got started at the Red Eye. You are a columnist there. Do your columns appear every Monday, is that it?
Every other Monday, and I also write a blog for them called Off the Markley. I'm also the author of Publish This Book, the unbelievable true story of how I wrote, sold, and published this very book.
It's so cool that you wrote a book about publishing the book. And
very
I believe
meta. Very
that's
meta.
What the kids say.
I believe the last time you were here, it was not available as an ebook, but now it is.
Yes.
So now you can officially shill it here on Cinema Jaw.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. So where can the Jawheads find publish this book?
Bookstores everywhere, Amazon, and now in ebook format.
And how long has this been out? It's been a few years since
you published
it. Yeah,
it came out in 2010, and hopefully there will be another big project sometime in the future. But until then, I have a smaller project that will soon be available.
And you were telling me a little bit about this before we went on.
I have to give you, I haven't even like broached that. You're the first people I've told in the universe, basically. But I am.
Oh, this is a Cinema Jaw exclusive.
Exclusive, yeah.
We're scooping
Cinema
it.
Jaw exclusive.
But I will be soon publishing a short ebook. I don't know if we call it an essayella, a nonfiction piece. And I just want to tease it, so I have to be very careful about what I say. But it involves psychedelic drugs and the most famous recent presidential debate in modern American history.
That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that
very,
sounds awesome,
very intriguing.
Dude. So wait, I can't ask, right? Like, who is on the drugs? Like, the character, the writer in the book?
Or? You'll have to wait and see.
Okay.
But it's
okay.
It's going to be called The Great Dysmorphia, an epistemological view of ingesting hallucinogenic mushrooms at a 2012 Republican presidential debate.
What kind of view on ingesting mushrooms?
The word is epistemological.
Okay, what the hell does that mean, dude?
It's like how we know about knowing. That's what that essentially means.
That's a word you have to take mushrooms to even
exactly.
know.
Exactly! Now you're totally understanding. You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
Cool. I already love it.
It sounds great. And when can we expect, hopefully, this to be out? At the end of this month?
I'm hoping the end of the month or early September.
Totally excited for it.
So is this like almost like a new publishing model where you put out these shorter ebooks? And
this is something that I've had people in my ear telling me to experiment with. And so this is my first little dip of the toe into that world.
That and mushrooms, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I figured what better way to do it than with something that could possibly get me arrested. So.
That's awesome, man.
It's amazing how things have changed since you wrote the book, published this book, and now with all the ebook technology, just in that short span of time,
and it's
how,
only been
how technology
like a year.
Has
Absolutely.
Changed.
And I talk about that in every interview, how I wrote a book about publishing the moment publishing became something totally different. The old brick and mortar bookstore, Borders has gone under. It's a dead world now, and it's this new, very interesting, but also very scary world that writers live in.
Yeah, I've had a Nook and have been reading some of these ebooks for a long time. And some of them you can get burned on because they sell them for like 99 cents.
Sure.
I've bought a couple and tried to check out and discover a new author. And some of them are just junk out there. So I know what you mean. It's almost a little bit of a scary thing in that sense.
You know, but on the opposite end of that spectrum, you can do so many really cool things with ebooks. Like, I just got an ebook on magic on Bartrix called Scam School, and it's not only the text, but you get videos embedded in and the audio of the author explaining how to do the tricks, and it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities, but like with any technological change, the people who used to make their money from standard publishing and writing are going to have to adjust. And so this is kind of my way of figuring out how that adjustment's going to work.
That's exciting. Cool. Yeah. That's exciting. And how are the other columnists at the Red Eye doing? Have you talked to Elliot Serrano lately? Geek to me on Twitter. He's a friend of ours here on the
show.
Yeah,
you know, I need to hang out with him more. We tweet. We hate tweet each other a lot. We really enjoy that. But we need to get together and yell at each other about movies. We have a great rivalry that we need to renew. And I just haven't had the opportunity in a little while.
So he's got to be at odds with your Batman review because I saw the tweet. You have somewhat of a negative.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. There was a brief Twitter war on my my at section. But Elliot, I think he was with me.
Oh, okay.
Or you turned him to the dark side.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
So definitely check out Stephen's columns in the Red Eye every other Monday and look for his new project that's going to be available as an ebook and also publish this book, which is available now.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Hey, Stephen's going to be sitting in on the entire episode. He's a great guest to have when we're talking about movies, about writers, Matt. But before we get there, of course, we have a few segments to take care of. And up first is Eye for an Eye, Interested or Ignore. And Eye for an Eye is sponsored by
the new 400.
And the best thing about the new 400 theaters, Matt, is they have a full liquor bar at the concession stand.
Yeah, that's right. If you're hungover, go in for a matinee, have a little bit of the hair of the dog that bit you, and you'll be feeling fine by the end of the movie.
Absolutely. Not to mention, Matt, they have the best prices for first-run movies in all of Chicago.
They certainly do, Rye. Check out what's playing at thenew400.com, and we thank them for their support of Cinema Jaw.
So Eye for an Eye this week, Matt, is The Bourne Legacy, an expansion of the universe from Robert Ludlum's novels, centered on a new hero whose stakes have been triggered by the events of the previous three films. Our new hero's name is Aaron Cross, and he is played by Jeremy Renner. Also joining the cast are Edward Norton and Rachel Weisz, while the film is written and directed by Tony Gilroy, who's previously directed Duplicity and Michael Clayton. Matt, interested or ignore on The Bourne Legacy?
You know, as much as I want to support Hawkeye and I really love the Jason Bourne films, I'm not in with this one. Ignore.
Wow, we throw it over to Steven. Interested or ignore on The Bourne Legacy?
I disagree. I'm interested. Michael Clayton was a great movie and it has a very solid cast. I like Jeremy Renner.
Wow.
I like Renner too.
I actually don't like Renner.
How do you not like Renner?
I think
Hurt
he's,
Locker?
I do like Hurt Locker, but okay. I think he's too fast did he get to stardom. I don't think he's quite there yet for me. I don't know. There's something like, now he's starring in everything, and he was that little bow and arrow guy in
Hawkeye.
The Avengers.
Yeah, I agree.
Oh, little Hawkeye bow and arrow.
Yeah, that was a joke.
I agree. Hawkeye sucked. That's fair.
And well, let's be honest about these Bourne movies.
Awesome.
The last one ended so perfectly with Jason Bourne. I wish they would have left it alone. But I actually do have to say I'm slightly interested because when I noticed the previews, it seems like the story is actually taking place during part of the third Jason Bourne film. You actually see some of the scenes that were taking place. They're talking about Jason Bourne being in Manhattan. So it's like the time of that story is also when this one was taking place. Interested to see what they do with it. Might not see it in the theater. Probably a rental, but I'm going to give it an interested.
That's a weak interested, though, Rye.
Weak interested. It's not one of the big summer movies that I'm running out to see, but for sure. But I am interested.
Yeah, okay. I'll go with that.
Yes. Matt, I always like to do a segment we call Jaw 101, which is where we try to describe an actor or a director in one word. And this week, because Edward Norton is joining the cast of The Bourne Legacy, we decided to take Edward Norton as our subject. We'll throw it over to you first, Stephen. How would you describe Ed Norton in one word?
This was sprung on me very quickly, but I'm going with canine. He looks kind of like a dumb dog to me. I don't know.
Really?
Yeah, he's got like that weird like slim face, and his eyes are too close together. That's all I got.
Well, I didn't see that one coming
at
all.
Neither did I, really.
Do you like him as an actor, though?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's hit a point where he's a bit overexposed for me.
Yeah.
He's been in too many roles that I think suck. But
I would agree with that.
Do you ever just, when he pops up on screen, start barking at him?
You can't take away Fight Club. You can't take away Primal Fear.
True.
So
American History X.
American History X, for
and,
sure.
And actually, looking at those movies is how I came up with the word that I'm using to describe Edward Norton. I went with consistent.
Yeah, but what about the Hulk?
Well, I've never seen The Hulk. I'm not a Hulk fan.
But he did it.
From what I hear, he did a pretty good job.
Yeah, it was
okay. He himself, his roles, his acting is usually pretty spot on in all the movies. You never come out of a movie and think, like, Edward Norton ruined that film. If anything, he might have been in a bad movie. But I think every time he's consistent in every single movie. That's why I went with consistent.
All right. I dig it.
What do you got, Matt?
I got character. That's my word. I think, like, kind of building off what you said, he really becomes whatever character he's playing to a point where you almost lose sight of Edward Norton, well, any good actor does this, but he does it so well. He can play characters that are so far apart, like the white supremacist in American History X, and then Larry Flint's lawyer in The People versus Larry Flint. He's a great actor, one of the best of our times, I say. I really like Ed Norton.
No arguing here.
I think I retract my previous statements.
I like K-9.
Yeah, I think you're right. Edward Norton is great.
He is great, but yeah. If he looks like a dumb dog.
He does look like a dumb dog. I say by that.
Then he looks like a dumb dog.
I feel like I have to take back overexposed. I think Edward Norton's fantastic.
Wow.
That's a full retraction in like 30 seconds.
You heard it right here, folks.
Awesome. Now, we threw this out to the Jawheads on Twitter, picked out some of our favorites. Matt, what word were they using to describe Edward Norton?
Okay, from Lunchbox FR, which is Frankie Rodriguez, former guest, writes cerebral. Yeah. Coupon Cat, who always chimes in, says enigmatic. Yeah, he's got a bit of a mystery about him, and I think that's about how deep he dives into a character.
Yeah, it depends, I guess, on the role, but I could see it. Decent.
Discuss_cinema on Twitter says Jack. Which is, of course, a Fight Club reference.
It is? He's not Jack in there.
No. But he always says, I'm Jack's this or that.
Yes.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Right. I saw that on Twitter, and I didn't get that. Okay, good.
Now you do. And then this one's actually my favorite. Michael Sen says Worm. Now, tell me that reference.
That is from Rounders, one of my favorite Edward Norton.
Nice.
I love that. Worm is one of his best characters. That's another great one.
See, the guy's a great character actor, you know? I think one of the best.
That's why I gave you the retraction.
Yeah.
Jawheads at home, if you are listening to this and you have Twitter pulled up, shoot us a tweet. Shoot us another one that we may have missed. Let us know what you think of Ed Norton in one word. But Ed Norton is joining the cast of The Bourne Legacy. Two interesteds, one ignore.
Yeah, I'm just being honest.
And Matt, speaking of new movies, there's a big new movie that
really?
Just came out that you have failed to see.
What's it called?
It is called The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh, sounds interesting.
Or, Matt, should it be known as Robin's prequel? The third installment in Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy is actually probably the weakest. To be fair, it may be because how good the first two were that we all went in with such high expectations that we actually forgot this is a summer superhero movie, and that's about it. Batman faces his toughest challenge here, Matt. Bane physically defeats him, leaving him in a prison somewhere in the Middle East to watch as Gotham is destroyed. Except Bane and his cohort decide to wait on blowing the city up, giving Batman just enough time to come back and save the day. I must say, I really ended up liking Anne Hathaway as Catwoman, and the final 15 minutes or so were pretty great. However, my high expectations were not met. Rye the Movie Guy's grade, 2.5 Jaws, a grade of a B- for this one.
So Dark Knight Rises doesn't rise above Dark Knight.
It does not
rise. Not even
rise.
Close.
No, not even close. Not even on the same plane.
No. So now, guys, I mean, from what I've been seeing on Twitter, you're fairly alone on this.
I disagree. I wrote a column about how much I disliked the movie, how disappointed I was with it, and I feel like I got a fairly decent response from people. Maybe not the overwhelming majority by any means, but still, people agreed. It was not what it should have been.
Wendon, like I was saying here, with such high expectations, and you think that played a big role into it?
Expectations are a huge part, but also I think Dark Knight, in that Nolan totally expanded our view of what a superhero movie could be. And Dark Knight Rises was very conventional.
It was. We were talking before we went on. This is probably the weakest plot lines as far as the writing goes.
Oh,
correct?
Sure. I was telling you, I watched by chance Captain America last night on Netflix Instant. And I was shocked by how many times I was like, well, this is a really conventional superhero movie. And it reminds me totally of why I didn't like Dark Knight Rises. Because it was conventional. And those every little plot point you'd seen in every other movie a million times before. And I just think Bane was a bad choice of villain.
Probably, in hindsight, Bane could have came before the Joker, and it could have finished the whole trilogy off with... But maybe the storyline
then
wouldn't
work. Well,
then we
would have had Heath Ledger's brilliant performance as the Joker, so... Which villain would you have subbed in, though, for Bane?
I think you could have gone almost any other direction. The problem with Bane is he's wearing a mask the whole time, so he's not expressive. So all of his expressions coming through his voice, and he gave these long, really hackneyed, terrible speeches that were too standard cliche movie villain. And, you know, Ledger was great because he was this really weird, interesting villain. And I just think Bane was the wrong way to go with that. They should have gone more character actor, more cerebral.
They should have got Ed Norton is kind of what you're saying.
There you go.
I keep going into these superhero movies thinking, realizing now, I should say, that the better the villain, the better the movie.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Exactly. You're just picking up on this, man?
Well, no, but I don't think I really put it as much weight on that as I'm realizing now. It really comes down to that.
See, but Bane is a super important villain to Batman. He's the one that broke Batman's
back.
In
the Batman universe, sure, but if you're trying to make a good movie, I feel like you have to go with a villain that works for the screen.
Which is kind of why I put you on the spot and saying, which villain would you have subbed in from Batman's Rogues Gallery?
Oh, I think there are so many great actors you could have gotten to play the Riddler or
the Riddler,
Penguin, anyone. I mean, I just think that using Bane was is kind of a cop out.
You know, I will say this, and we talk mainly about movies, but there was an awesome video game, Arkham City. Have you played this?
I have not, but I've heard a lot about it.
God, yeah. It's ridiculous. And what they did with the Penguin, seriously, some good writing. I mean, forget the video game. It's just quality writing, and they actually made the Penguin a scary character.
Would have loved to see that. Absolutely.
So maybe you're right. Maybe you're right.
So how many Jaws, we go on a scale of 1 to 4, would you give The Dark Knight Rises, Steven?
I mean, it was still a visually entertaining movie, so I would go 2.
Two
out of 4.
Wow, that's low.
Yeah.
How about you, Ryan?
I gave it 2.5. So, yeah, I was hoping for a four jaw movie,
oh,
but
so
I
was
just
I.
didn't get it.
I don't want people to think that I didn't really want to like it, because I really did want to like it. Just didn't.
Well, I'll say this. If you're listening at home and you're throwing your shoes at your iPod right now, I'm going to go see it this week, and I'll have a review, and I'll let you know if I agree or disagree.
Sounds good. We'll have a Twitter war about it.
Yes, we will. Or not. Or I'll be like, Mark Lee was right.
There were no great writers inside Batman. There was no author trying to publish a book before Gotham blew up. But it is our topic because Steven is an author of the book, Publish This Book. We thought it'd be great to cover movies about writers. There's a ton of them out there. It's a fun topic, and I think it's interesting because there's so many different. You could go screenwriter, you could go poet, you could go writer. We'll see where this goes.
Yeah, this is a great topic.
Matt, you're getting us started this week with your number 5 film.
My number 5, I'm coming right out of the gate with American Splendor.
Good one. Good one.
2003, it's about Harvey Pekar, famously played by Paul Giamatti, and it sort of blends documentary and biopic together because there's footage of the real Harvey Pekar mingled in with footage of Paul Giamatti playing him, and they sort of blur that line very masterfully, I thought, you know? And they also throw in some animation. It was such a cool movie.
It is. It's an excellent movie. And actually, totally off my radar. I don't know why. I just didn't even consider it for this list. I love when that happens. But you're totally right. Yes.
Well, Pekar, of course, is one of the most prolific writers of indie comics with an X of the same name, American Splendor. So, yeah, it's definitely
about a
writer.
He's also a famous Ohioan, so that's close to my heart. As
true.
Well.
Yeah.
Big time I believe Cleveland the movie guy. Took place in Cleveland. Yes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes. Great pick.
One of Giamatti's best roles.
It is, definitely. It's definitely in his top 3 right there. Great pick to get us started. Matt, we throw it over to Steven. You're number 5.
Okay. I am often offended by movies about writing and writers because they just tend to traffic in cliches of the drunk alcoholic who can't. He has writer's block.
I got a few of those on my list.
Having said that, I had to put at least one on here, so I'll go with the ultimate, which is The Shining. where nice. Jack Nicholson plays the tortured writer.
That's another one I didn't consider this.
Goes crazy and like starts chopping people up with an axe.
It's Jack at his best.
Yeah, absolutely.
And oh, God, yeah.
It is still to this day, like, it is a movie that holds up so well. It is so creepy still.
This movie actually traumatized my mom to the point where if we walked through the house wiggling our finger and saying, Red, Rob,
yeah,
she would literally scream and, like, punish us. Like, you're grounded for a week.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies with the classic scene, obviously, here's Johnny. You could see it over and over again. It's
it never gets old.
It never gets old.
My favorite is the baseball bat coming up the stairs. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your effing head in. It's great.
Oh, man. Couple of greats here at number five. I have another absolute classic at my number five. Came out in 1950. AFI, it always appears in the top 10, top five probably even. It's a screenwriting type movie. I'm speaking of Sunset Boulevard.
I haven't seen this one.
Oh, man. This is directed by Billy Wilder, has William Holden in it, and also Gloria Swanson. And this is the film that has the two classic lines, I am big, it's the pictures that got small. You know this one?
I'm ashamed to say
no.
I haven't seen
oh,
it.
Oh, my goodness.
But I know of it.
And then, of course, at the very end, you'll see this in all the montage clips always. She looks right at the camera and says, and Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
That I've heard of,
yes,
of course.
Yes, this is all takes place in this movie. Wilder plays a screenwriter who actually goes to this old mansion set on Sunset Boulevard where Swanson plays like this old silent film star who still believes she's this humongous star and sort of brings him in to write a new movie for her.
A new vehicle.
And it's actually like a film noir. It just looks beautiful on film, and it's creepy how like out of touch she is.
Gene Wilder is in this?
No, Billy Wilder directed it. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was, William Holden. William Holden plays the screenwriter. Excellent, excellent film.
Put it on my Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, AFI, it's always in like the top five greatest of all time, and I got to agree with them. That's my number five. We swing it into our fours, Matt.
All right, at number four, and I hope I'm not throwing this one out too early, but I got a great list, so 1987 movie starring the great Mickey Rourke. I'm talking about Barfly.
Yeah.
Did I steal anybody's?
Nope.
I have not seen this movie yet.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh, of course. It's about Charles Bukowski. I think he actually wrote this, and it's sort of semi-autobiographical. It's about a writer who's a drunk, and he hangs out at a bar all the time. He meets a rich publisher who, of course, is a woman, and she wants to publish his book. They sleep together, and wackiness ensues. I'm not going to ruin the movie for you, even though it's like 20 years old at this point. One of Mickey Rourke's early great performances before he went off the deep end. Seek this one out, Ry. You've got to see this.
That's my Q-tip right there, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm putting it on the queue.
Great movie.
Nice pick. Nice pick. Swings it over to Steven's number four.
What I like about these lists is bringing up the undiscovered movies that people might not have seen. So for number four, I have a movie called World's Greatest Dad. You guys seen it?
I believe this is with directed
with Robin Williams,
Bobcat.
Yes. Goldwyn.
Yes.
Really?
And it is...
That would have been an interesting set to be on.
Yeah, it is. It's about Robin Williams plays a totally failed writer who's a high school teacher whose son is this absolute jerk who dies while masturbating. And Robin Williams doesn't want people to know this about his son, so he writes a suicide letter that then the kids all in the high school go nuts over, and it's his only success. It is so dark and so very funny. I really recommend you see it.
I have heard nothing but good things about this movie.
Yeah.
And I remember everybody sort of being shocked that it was by Bobcat and, you know, Robin Williams in this movie. I'm pumped to see this.
Honestly, I think Bobcat Goldthwait is one of the more creative people. He's so underrated. Did you ever see Shakes the Clown?
I have not seen it. My cousin keeps telling me to see this
you
movie.
You really have to see that movie. Bobcat Goldthwait is great.
Nice pick. Thanks. I got two Q-tips already. This is great. Swings us over to my number four. And at my number four, I have an Oscar winner. I don't know if you guys will love this movie. And love's a key word in it. 1998. Ended up beating out Saving Private Ryan, which a lot of people hate it for. I'm speaking of Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, yeah. I hate it for that, too.
Yeah. You probably haven't even seen it, Matt.
No, I saw it.
This is just a fun look at Shakespeare while he's trying to write Romeo and Juliet, falling in love with Gwyneth Paltrow. Obviously, women can't be on stage at the time. I don't know. I have fun with it. And the cast is great, too. I mean, you got Jeffrey Rush in there, Gwyneth Paltrow, Ralph Fiennes, Judi Dench.
Kevin Kline's in there, too, right?
No.
No? I thought he was in that.
Ben
Affleck?
Affleck's in there.
Oh, yeah.
It's a... I it's one of those, for some reason, I can throw on and just enjoy multiple viewings.
But you don't resent it at all for it was at the height of the Weinsteins' power, and they bought the Oscar and all that kind of stuff.
I actually
know. Why do I
do.
Care about the Oscars?
I agree. I think most people now, when they look at it, would probably just say, well, I think we know Saving Private Ryan's a better movie. It really changed pictures going forward.
Absolutely.
For sure.
So it's tough to say, but I don't hold it against it. I just enjoy Shakespeare in Love, my number four.
That's big of you. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. Swings us into our threes. What do you got, Matt?
Right. I think I'm hopefully stealing one off your list here. It's a Woody Allen pick.
Oh, nice.
And when you're talking about Woody Allen, he often writes about writers.
Not a writer, it's a director, or it's a...
Right.
This happens to be my personal favorite of his more serious films, Deconstructing Harry. And I think this is the one where he really delves into the writer's mind the most. I could be wrong, but that's my opinion. The name of the movie, Deconstructing Harry, it sort of implies that he's, taking this journey sort of down into this character. And Billy Crystal shows up as the devil in this in one of the greatest scenes.
It's so funny.
It's very clever. The whole script, it's Woody Allen, so... you're in for a treat, and this one does not disappoint. 1997.
Yeah. This one actually came out, like you say, 1997, later after he'd already put out a few duds, and really it was a highlight for a while. It was well-received.
Do you guys feel like seeing Woody Allen movies is one of those things where you wait around for 10 years to hear what are the good ones, and then you'll go back and watch those and skip the four duds?
Well, you know what?
Kind of, yes.
Yeah, I could see people doing that because he just puts them out and puts them out. So it's
there's one a year almost.
One a year.
When I became a really big Woody Allen fan, I just set, hey, I'm going to see every Woody Allen movie, and I just started going through them all. But I know what you mean. When I talk to people, they're like, oh my God, there's so many. I don't know which ones to see.
Sure.
I know Will Allison, a guy who listens to the show, he asked me one time, he's like, I want to see, a couple. What do you recommend? So I agree. Looking at it,
Annie Hall, Manhattan, and Deconstructing Harry are my top recommends for Woody Allen. So
those are some great ones right there. A good way to start.
Yeah. And the scene with him and Kirstie Alley, unbelievable, where she discovers his affair.
Yes.
And she's a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and she's got a patient there, and she's screaming like F-bombs at him. Just go watch that on YouTube right now.
Yeah, Deconstructing Harry. Great pick, man.
Thanks.
Swings us over to Steven's number three.
Okay, here's another one that's a little more obscure. It's called Reprise. And it's a Norwegian film. Now, I know when you recommend movies with subtitles, people immediately resist. But this
movie, here on this show.
This movie is really funny. It's really funny. Just to summarize very quickly, it's about two friends who both want to become writers, one of whom becomes a huge success and one who fails completely. And I think what I love about it is that it gives this insight into the world of writing where you do have such jealousy of people who have more success than you, where it feels like a very zero-sum game. And even if writers don't admit to that, if you're in this kind of business where you're trying to publish and you're trying to get people to read your stuff, you're very competitive. You're like Michael Jordan with methamphetamines in his head. I just think such a good look into that world, plus it's hysterical.
Sounds intriguing already. And the name of it again?
Reprise.
Reprise. Boy, oh boy, loading up my queue here today.
Yeah, seriously.
And it actually reminds me of another Woody Allen, which I didn't absolutely love. This one came out maybe a year or two ago. It's called You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger. And it has just a small plot line about two writers. One writer thinks the other writer died in a car accident because two guys get in a car accident. And he knows that he wrote this great book. And so he thinks he's died. So he went into his apartment and ends up publishing the book under his name. It ends up that it was the other guy in the car that died. And the actual writer who wrote the book was just in a coma, who wakes up later in the hospital after this guy's already
published his book and received
all this praise for it. It's hilarious. Great pick, though. These are some strong ones.
Totally.
Swings us into my number three, and actually at my number three, it could be either one of yours number one. It's that strong of a pick, mainly for how creative it is. Came out in 2002. It stars the foolish Nick Cage, so that's a handicap right there. At number three, I have the Charlie Kaufman masterpiece adaptation.
It's not on my list, but I flirted with it, man. It's a great movie.
Oh, my. On your list?
Yeah, nope. Not on my list.
I mean, you got Nicolas Cage, Meryl Streep, Chris Cooper, and Cage pulls double duty. He plays Charlie and Donald Kaufman. And Charlie is actually trying to adapt a book called The Orchid Thief to the big screen and eventually asks his brother's help. And in return, they actually become sort of part of the story. It's a crazy Charlie Kaufman-esque movie where you just got to sort of go with it. It's tough to explain.
It's not Charlie Kaufman-esque. It's Charlie Kaufman.
Yes, right. Why am I saying esque? Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, you just got to go into it. And what an enjoyable movie. Nick Cage was phenomenal in this. He was nominated for Academy Award. Charlie Kaufman actually won for screenwriting for this. Meryl Streep was nominated. Chris Cooper won for Best Supporting Actor. Great, great movie. If you haven't seen it, adaptation, Jawheads, one of my favorites.
Nicolas Cage is actually capable of really good things, so this is case in point.
Yeah,
right,
Drive
there.
Angry, Ghost Rider 2, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. All right, swing this into our twos. Matt, what do you got sitting there?
Capote. Had to be said, man.
No doubt.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's tour de force as Truman Capote won the Oscar. I think it won all of our hearts that year. It's a great movie. It made me, honestly, I hadn't read In Cold Blood before I saw this movie. And then as soon as I finished watching it, I went ahead and bought In Cold Blood and I read it. And I was introduced to the actual like words of Capote on the page. And what a great American writer he was. Very
yeah.
important guy.
Now, In Cold Blood is a great book. And that's a... It was a very good movie. I have the resentment thing for it, though, because I thought Heath Ledger should have won that year for Brokeback. He was my preferred.
You seem to hold grudges,
I hold huge grudges. I do. At the Oscars, something I don't even care about.
Was it that year? Was that year?
Yeah, I remember it. I
got to agree with you. I remember seeing Brokeback that year. I'm thinking to myself, wow, I think he deserves the Academy Award for
but
this.
But I thought Ledger was the best thing that I'd seen on screen that whole year in that
movie.
Well,
you know what? In hindsight, you might be right, but Philip Seymour Hoffman was amazing.
He is amazing.
He truly became Capote, yes. Which was... You know, Capote's a very distinct character.
But don't you think that also means it's a more attention-grabbing role? It's an easier role to do because you're seeking out people's attention for mimicking someone rather than playing this like deep psychological conflict of this guy.
True, but it's also easier to fail at because there's somebody to compare his performance to, whereas Ledger's performance in Brokeback, that was his own creation. There's nothing to compare it to, so nobody can say you did that wrong.
Yeah, well, I'll always take original over creating a character that we can all see. Like
I don't
Will
disagree
Smith
with that.
Will Smith as Ali doesn't do much for me. Like,
ooh.
Similar...
I don't know. I liked him in his alley, but that's a whole nother discussion.
All right. We're getting too deep into the weeds now. Too deep into the weeds.
Hey, but there's a movie that came out the following year called In Cold Blood about basically the same story. I don't know if you've seen this movie.
No, not at all.
Look it up. It's
Have
any notes on it. I've seen it, too.
Okay.
And it's also definitely worth checking out.
You
in
sure?
Cold right. Blood.
What about Infamous? Wasn't Infamous another movie?
I think you're right.
Maybe
yes.
It was Infamous.
Yeah,
maybe.
That it was
might
based
be.
On
it was like the following
In Cold Blood.
Year.
Yeah.
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 Which I didn't see either.
I did not either.
I know I saw it. It came out the next year, and I already forget who played Capote, but also did an excellent job. But yeah, Capote's a great one, Matt.
Yeah, definitely.
Steven swings us over to your number two. What do you got?
Okay. Have you seen a film called Shattered Glass with Hayden Christensen?
Oh, great one.
Such
Forgot no. all about this
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
You mean you're talking about Darth Vader?
I'm talking about... All right. I hated this kid
so
in Star
I.
Wars so much that I thought there was no way I would like this movie. I saw it 5 years after it came out.
This is where he plagiarizes or he
yes.
makes up this story.
It's the true story of a guy named Stephen Glass who wrote for the New Republic who basically made up out of thin air every story he wrote for them.
Yes.
And then another journalist at Vanity Fair discovered this and the film is about his undoing. And it is just, it gives such a great insight into like kind of the high stakes world of political journalism. But at the same time, watching Hayden Christensen like squirm and whine about the whole thing is terrific.
He was perfect.
Certainly good at squirming
role.
And whining.
Yeah, and it's great for this role. Not
it
as
is.
The scariest villain of all movie history.
And you know, I remember after seeing this movie thinking to myself, Hayden Christensen's going to make it in the business because this was phenomenal. I loved it. And it really hasn't panned out for him. But I agree, this was an awesome movie.
Yeah.
Great
I'll check
pick.
It out, yeah.
Totally forgot about it. Oh, these are some great ones here, man. Swings us over to my number two, and I've talked about this one, I think, once before on CinemaJaw. It's one of my favorite independent films of all time. Came out in 2005. Stars Jeff Daniels, The Squid and the Whale.
Oh, yeah. Good one.
Yeah, I thought for sure this would be on your list.
Oh,
dude.
My. I mean, this is, in the last 15 years or so, in my top 10 of all time. I love it. It's got Jeff Daniels, Laura Linney. It really gave us Jesse Eisenberg. This was his first breakout movie. It's directed by Noah Baumbach, who's tied in with Wes Anderson. They do great work together. They wrote Royal Tenenbaums together and such. And also, Stephen Baldwin's in here. He plays like a tennis pro.
Yeah.
He's hilarious. the characters, the Jeff Daniels, who plays Bernard, is he's like a pseudo-intellectual writer. It's hilarious. You could just watch this guy say anything and just laugh. It's not like he's trying to be funny. It's just the way he delivers the lines. The character himself is hysterical.
Did it make you wish that Jeff Daniels would get more roles that are better?
Because
he was so funny in that.
He was so funny. It was so great. And Jesse Eisenberg was perfect in there. And of course, Laura Linney starts to become a writer, and there's a little bit of competition. Oh, man, I love it. Jawheads, please, if you have not seen The Squid and the Whale, do yourself a favor. One of my favorites. Wow, Matt, gets us to our number ones, and we don't have a crossover yet. This is shocking.
I know. I am shocked. Maybe
this is one for the books.
We ushered in the new millennium with a movie written and directed by Cameron Crowe about his early exploits at Rolling Stone. I'm talking about Almost Famous.
Yes. Excellent pick.
I mean, this is about a 13-year-old boy on tour with a band who's ostensibly, it was Led Zeppelin, right? I mean,
supposedly it was, but we didn't really know. There was Stillwater in the movie, right?
Right. Yeah. Jason Lee, a fantastic role for Jason Lee. And I think the band is sort of like an amalgam of a few different tours he went on. Just a really well-told story. It probably Goldie Hawn's daughter's, what's her name? Kate Hudson's.
Yeah.
I think that's her flagship role.
That's her only role. Yeah, easily.
Unless you count Fool's Gold with McConaughey. But that's
or Skeleton.
That's a close second.
Yeah. I mean, even the movie poster with the sunglasses, I mean, that's an iconic poster. This is a movie that in 20 years from now, we'll probably still be talking about. Cameron Crowe's had some great movies. I don't want to say it's easily his best.
It's not easily his best.
It's my favorite.
Good. Well said.
Yeah. So,
I love it also.
It's definitely my favorite movie.
He has so many great
writers.
Ones. I can't say it's easily his best, but great pick. Great pick. Steven, can you top it? What's your number one?
I don't know. This isn't about topping for me. I just like to share favorite movies of mine. That's what I like to do.
He's backpedaling already, Matt.
This is, well, I think best is such a weird distinction. I think my favorites, these are my favorites. It's Before Sunset is my number one.
Wow, great pick.
And
I've not seen this.
Okay, so Before Sunrise is the film where Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy meet, and they have this one night they don't see each other ever again.
And then they made a sequel.
So the sequel to it should not work because you're not supposed to see these characters reunite.
It's 10
ever.
Years later.
I thought it was a terrible idea. I didn't want to see the movie, and it is so good. And the plot is basically that Ethan Hawke is in Paris for a book signing. He's an author now, and he's written about their experience together and how Julie Delpy never met him when they had agreed to meet in Paris when they were 10 years younger. It just rekindles that really great chemistry between these two actors. And I think also for me, it says something so true about like that experience of first getting something published when you're kind of out in the world and you're like ready to go. But I guess your surroundings haven't quite turned out to be what you would have expected them to be. That might not have made sense, but that's the best way I can describe it.
And you know what, too, Steven, about the movie that I love so much is just the writing. Because it's got to be the number one thing in the movie because that's all there is them, the dialogue between these two characters as they sit in a cafe, they get on a boat, or they're walking down the streets. It's the writing, the conversation that they're having. It just draws the viewer in. You would think, who would want to see a movie about two people talking about
things?
And
you just hinge on every word. Yeah.
And yet I would give this thing four Jaws. It's a great, great movie.
Really terrific film.
I think this is the second or third or fourth time that this series or duology or whatever you want to call it of movies has come up. I got to see this.
You really do.
Yeah.
You really
I'll bring
do.
Them in for
Essential
you.
Essential viewing.
They both sit in my collection proudly. I'll bring them in for you.
Duology? What's the word for two movies? I just made a
we'll
word
come
up.
Come up with one.
I think I just coined it.
All right. Swings us over to my number one, and I could say we did not cross over, so that is fantastic.
Oh, wow.
My number one came out in 2000. It's probably my favorite Michael Douglas movie of all time. You know where I'm going with it already,
sure do.
Steven.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Wonder Boys.
Had to be said.
Yeah. Someone had to go there.
I love this film. It's got Michael Douglas, Tobey Maguire, Katie Holmes, Robert Downey Jr., Francis McDormand. As you talked about, it's sort of a cliche of the author who's just sort of down and out. He's got writer's block.
Yeah.
But it's really Tobey Maguire, and I love that idea that this kid just has got the talent to write. And I love that Michael Douglas's character in the movie sort of sees that gift for Tobey Maguire. The ending of that movie when, you know, they say that, hey, he got a publisher for his book, and he starts yelling, "Take a bow, James!" He's so proud of him. It's such a moving moment.
Yeah.
And I think that's what really connects the most of those two characters. But in between that, Robert Downey Jr., everything else is hilarious in the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's a movie with three of the best male leads you could think with a movie with three best male leads of, is it, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
And it also has one of my favorite soundtracks to a movie. It's all Dylan and Van Morrison and John Lennon. It's terrific.
Is it better than Almost Famous, man?
I'd put it above the Almost Famous.
Wow. Well, I believe, I may be incorrect on this, but I believe Bob Dylan wrote a song specifically for Wonder
sure
Boys,
did.
And
yeah.
he won the Oscar for
oh,
it.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He did.
Yeah.
So definitely check out the soundtrack. And also, I had noted here, the book in the movie that Michael Douglas was famous for writing was The Arsonist's Daughter. And they constantly talk about it. It's been so long since The Arsonist's Daughter. It's fantastic. I love it. Any honorables?
I got some honorables, dude.
I got a couple. Let me go first really
go
quick.
Go for it.
The Hours, a look at Virginia Woolf. Nicole Kidman won the Academy Award. Also, I had Deconstructing Harry as an honorable, and Capote as an honorable, also mentioned.
All right, I'm going to do these rapid fire because I believe they don't need any description here. Misery.
Yes.
Woo.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes.
Adaptation, which you mentioned. Naked Lunch.
I have not seen it.
Oh, man, it's really, really good. It's out there. You would
it's
like
a
it.
Shame.
It's
yeah,
it's
I should see that.
Take some mushrooms before you do. All the President's Men.
Good one.
Which
good
is,
one.
You know, about the Watergate scandal. And you know what? Believe it or not, Sex in the City.
Oh, man.
No, the first one.
Why do you do that to us?
All right. I take it back. Fuck Sex in the City.
Well, I
said
had a couple of those also on my not quite making it list. The other one that I'd like to just throw in, Ed Wood.
Yeah.
Ed Wood.
Absolutely. Sure.
Only Tim Burton, Johnny Depp movie that I actually love. The rest I find weird and strangely.
Yeah,
there's
what about
a couple
Edward Scissorhands?
There.
Nope. Don't like it.
Oh,
don't like
God.
It. Yeah.
Really?
Agree
right.
or disagree.
We'll discuss more at the break, but we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we have Matt versus Steven. And there's a movie coming out called The Campaign. So in honor of that, we have Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis movie trivia.
Oh, my God.
Nice.
And plus a Cinema War that's going to look at who was the better Batman. We'll be right back on Cinema Jaw.
Hi, I'm Matt Kay with a Cinema Jaw movie fact. In the movie The Big Lebowski, the photo that the PI shows the dude of Bunny Lebowski's farm is the photo of the real Cutler home where the murder chronicled in Truman Capote's In Cold Blood took place. The two Lebowski actors went on to appear in Capote. Philip Seymour Hoffman, who played Brandt in Lebowski, and Mark Pellegrino, blonde treehorn thug in Lebowski. And that is your Cinema Jaw movie fact.
And we are back on Cinema Jaw. Matt, we're going to play trivia. Yourself versus Steven.
I'm putting my phone down.
That's
no,
coming
no,
up.
No cheating.
We also have a DVD review for you of John Carter and Into the Abyss. But before we get there, we have a segment we call
Cinema War.
And this is where me and Matt battle on a topic each week. And our guest, Steven Markley, gets to play judge and jury and tell the Jawheads at home who he thinks won this Cinema War. Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy is done. So we decided to look at the Batmans, the guys who have played them. Reno, tell the Jawheads at home what today's Cinema War topic is.
Today's Cinema War topic. Now that the Christopher Nolan's Batman series is done, who is the better Batman Bruce Wayne? Was it Michael Keaton or Christian Bale? Rye, you'll be fighting for Keaton. Matt, you'll be fighting for Bale. Let the Cinema War begin.
Matt, Michael Keaton didn't need to talk into some sort of gravelly voice. And his Bruce Wayne was as suave as they come. Looking back at it, Keaton's Bruce Wayne, Batman, was the best of all time.
You know, all right, one point that I have to concede to you right out of the gate is the stupid voice. However, once you get past that, Bale is clearly the best Batman. He's got the best acting chops. He's got the physique. He's got the dark mood of Batman. He got the character right.
Yeah, but Matt, the great thing about Michael Keaton is nobody could picture him as a superhero in a bat suit. That's the same thing as Bruce Wayne, and that's how he kept his identity. Christian Bale, he looks like a superhero. That's no fun.
No, that's called bad casting. Keaton is just too silly, and the movies were too silly. The whole reason that Nolan's bat films have struck a chord is a respect of the source material. Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight? Yeah, but I call it jerking off.
Matt, get a load of this, though. The artist, known as Prince, does not jump off his short little stool and sing a song for just anyone, but he did for Keaton's Batman. Plus, Keaton was able to lure better women with the likes of Kim Basinger and Michelle Pfeiffer. Take your sad little turtle, Maggie Gyllenhaal, and swim up a creek.
First of all right, check this out. Bale is a great Bruce Wayne, emotionally believable as the troubled, obsessive orphan who would become Batman. The other Batmen were just too one-dimensional, either too much Bruce or too much Bat. Bale has struck the balance.
Balance. Matt, Michael Keaton, Q killed his Joker, and he was smart enough to get out of the franchise after the first two installments before it went south. Like Bruce Wayne, Keaton used his smarts to make it work. Keaton is looked at as the highlight of those films, while as Bale is actually the weakest link in the Nolan trilogy.
Oh, man, come on. The weakest link? I don't know about that. The core of the Bat story is somebody who is deeply disturbed. Bruce Wayne. I just didn't get disturbed from Keaton. You can't play Batman with a sense of humor. The core of Keaton, he's a comedian. Bale is good at playing a psycho because he is a psycho, and that's why he's the best Batman.
Oh, man, you must be a Joker.
Wah, wah.
If you think.
Yeah.
All right, hey, we are buttonheads, as usual, here on Cinema Jaw, and the Cinema War topic is the better Batman. Stephen Markley, we throw it over to
Look,
you.
Look, I have so much respect for Michael Keaton. I think he is a fantastic actor. I think there was an Onion story about how he makes every movie 45% better. I totally agree with that. All that said, no way, man. Christian Bale is obviously the better Bruce Wayne and Batman. So many reasons, but I'll give you just the scene in Batman Begins, which is probably little remembered, where he struts into the restaurant with the two women on each arm and has them like bathing in the fountain. I think that's the essence of Bruce Wayne as his fake playboy.
Yes.
Where you're right. Thank you. He is actually a psycho. Yeah.
Yeah,
so I got to give it to Matt. I'm sorry.
Matt,
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
All respect
to
Michael Keaton.
All right. It's all right. I love my Michael Keaton, but you earned your 20 seconds of jaw time to rant and rave on whatever you want, Matt. So go ahead.
Okay, here it is. Ready? Warner Brothers DC, you are poised at a very, very precarious situation. You've got to match Marvel and make the Justice League movie just as cool as what they did with the Avengers. Be careful. Wonder Woman is the linchpin. That is my rant. Do right with Wonder Woman, and you will get the whole series right.
Did you say linchpin?
Wonder Woman is the linchpin of the Justice League.
What the hell does that mean?
The fans know. The fans know.
All right. Well, again, before we get to trivia, we were going to take a look at John Carter, and we're going to try to break this down in a new segment we call The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. I recently caught John Carter.
All right, Rye, give us the good.
The good, Matt, is the story from how John Carter gets to Mars to the epic Civil War battle taking place on the planet. I was most definitely interested. Also, the chemistry between Carter and the Princess of Mars. Now, it could have been better, but it was not bad by any means. Also, the aliens on the planet, four arms with tusks on their face. And I must mention, Bryan Cranston's small role in the beginning.
The bad?
The look of the film, Matt. Mixing in the actors with so much CGI just makes it look fake or childish. Carter's ridiculous jumping power also. While the premise of how he has the power to jump higher on the low-gravity planet is pretty cool, it's just over the top at times.
And the ugly?
A few of the special effects, Matt. They just look terrible at times. Totally took me out of the film. In conclusion, Rye the Movie Guy is giving John Carter 2.5 Jaws, 2 Jaws, grade of a C+.
All right. You were saying Dark Knight Rises and John Carter
is about the same.
About the same.
It's tough to judge on those
levels.
You know what I mean?
Where do you guys get your hate mail? Where does that come in?
Matt and Rye at CinemaJaw.com.
Or tweet us at CinemaJaw. I tell you, we're going to be loaded up here now
we'll
that I gave 2.5 Jaws to John Carter. But it's a lot better than the box office numbers. Everybody said it was a bomb, and people just stayed away like it was a dead skunk on
it's
the
not
road.
A total crap.
No. Check it out. It's actually worth a spin for sure. And also, two episodes ago in CinemaJaw 117, we covered our top five favorite documentaries.
Yeah.
And we did not mention Werner Herzog. He did Grizzly Man, which was absolutely
fantastic,
phenomenal, and
yeah.
He's done so many great documentaries.
We didn't mention Werner Herzog at all?
At all. Did not come up. Cave of Forgotten Dreams. He's done numerous. But he also does a film called Into the Abyss, which is out on DVD, and I highly recommend checking this one out. Takes a look at a crime that took place in Texas. He actually talks to the people who committed the crime. One of them is on death row, about to be executed that week. He also talks to the family of the people of the crime, and they recreate it in the beginning, sort of like a glorified 48 hours murder mystery. The whole thing comes together and has something to say about capital punishment, about the crime, and actually just about the characters, because Werner's always so interested in just the human
condition.
Yeah, the human condition, behavior. Why these things happen? He's just so interested in the actual characters.
The human side or elements of the story.
It's a fascinating movie. Highly recommend it. Ride the Movie Guy's grade on Into the Abyss. Three Jaws, grade of a B plus actually for this one. Definitely check it out.
So I caught Jeff, who lives at home.
Yes, and I had reviewed this couple Jaws earlier.
You did, and I will agree with your review. I think it was really well told. The only thing I didn't like were those little tight zooms they did. I don't remember if you commented on that in your review.
I didn't, but yeah.
They really kind of took me out of it. Have you seen this one?
I have not.
It's totally worth seeing. It's, of course, Ed Helms, Jason Segel. I definitely recommend you check this movie out. It's got a lot of heart. Susan Sarandon. It's a great little movie. Check it out.
I had said one of the parents for the movies was Signs.
Yes.
Totally.
Yeah. Three Jaws on this one.
Yeah. Good small independent film. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, totally.
And another movie opening up in theaters is called The Campaign. It stars Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. So we decided here on Cinema Jaw to do Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis movie trivia. Now, it works like this.
Ouch.
Yeah, we'll see.
It works like this. Steven, you're our guest. You get to choose if you want to go first or let Matt go first. There are steals. We're going to go back and forth. And if you get stuck on one, our producer, our wonderful producer, Steve Mrazek, has clues. So you just got to say, rescue me, Reno, and he'll help you out with one of them. Do you want to go first?
Oh,
or
I
want to
go first.
Oh, yes.
I'm here to win.
And it was competitive last time. Do you remember if you won last time?
I hope I did. I would think so. Let's just say I did.
I got to listen back to it. I don't remember either.
All right.
It's almost a year ago.
Question number one, over to Steven in Will Ferrell, Zach Galifianakis movie trivia. In 2010, Galifianakis was a schmuck in Dinner for Schmucks. What actor starred as Paul Rudd's schmuck who he brought to dinner?
Would that be Steve Carell?
1-0, Steven. Question number two, over to Matt. Will Ferrell played Jackie Moon in this 2008 so-called basketball movie.
The Right Stuff?
Oh, Matt, what?
Can
what, do you
I
think
steal
he's
that?
In space? Yeah. Do you think he's in space?
Can
Come
I
on.
Steal that?
Yeah,
yes, you got a chance for a steal.
Great. Okay, that would be semi-pro.
2-0, it's a Ouch. Slaughter at this point. Question number three is over to Steven. He could blow this thing wide open. Zach Galifianakis starred with Robert Downey Jr. in this 2010 film in which they're on a road trip together. You do have a rescue. Robert Downey Jr.
I saw this and I hated it. It's I'll take my rescue.
Rescue Me Reno. Question number three. Galifianakis and Robert Downey Jr. starred in what movie?
Actually, I know this one.
And your clue is Planned Baby Arrival Day.
Oh, due date.
He said one of the words in the title.
Hey.
Come on.
Hey, blame Reno. Yes.
Did you say day or date?
Well done. He said day. Well done.
Okay, all right.
Well done. All right. 3-0. Great rescue. Whew. 3-0, Steven. We throw question number four over to Matt. In 2008's Step Brothers, who was Will Ferrell's stepbrother?
The character or the actor?
The actor.
John C. Reilly.
Too easy.
Wow, 4-1. 4-1. We throw this one over to Steven. In 2010, Will Ferrell teamed up with Mark Wahlberg for this cop comedy.
The Will backup?
Wow.
The other guys.
Ah.
It is now 4-2. 4-2. And this question is over to Matt. Don't call it a comeback. Galifianakis starred as Alan in Hangover 2. What city did the movie take place in?
You better cover your crotch because it was Bangkok.
4-3. Steven, you left
choking.
The floodgates wide open here.
I'm choking.
All right. The coach, Mike Ditka, has a small role in this 2005 Will Ferrell soccer movie.
Kicking and Screaming.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Swish.
Yes. Wow. I think it is 5-2. Yes.
I thought I had three.
All right.
Yeah,
5-3. Well, it doesn't matter. 5-3, we'll say, because this is the last can't be. This is question number 8, so how could it be? 5-2, last question of the game. Matt, Galifianakis voices Humpty Dumpty in this film called Puss in Boots. What actor voices Puss in Boots?
That would be Antonio Banderas. I hope
makes it 5-3. Makes it 5-3, but that was the last question of the game. Well done, Steven.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nicely done, sir.
My knowledge of never seen Will Ferrell movies is always
there.
Come
there was a jawbreaker in case there was a tie. Steven, spell Galifianakis.
Galifianakis. Galifianakis.
You missed one eye. Not bad. Not bad.
Close enough. That one anyway.
Yeah, there's an extra eye in there, but you did really well. But that wasn't the real jawbreaker. The real jawbreaker was this. The age of Galifianakis, closest to, what would you say?
38.
Matt? Reno, can you lock him in at 38? Matt?
It's not a bad guess. I'll just say 40.
He is actually 42 years old.
So who won that?
Well, it would be you, Matt. Me. But it doesn't matter because Steven won the game. One headline each,
good
and
job.
We're done,
sorry,
Matt.
Man. I'm sorry.
We're running long here. One headline each.
Yeah, let's do it.
Get a load of this. I want your opinion. This week, Peter Jackson announced that he will actually turn The Hobbit into 3 films instead of the planned 2.
Oh, Jesus.
Do not like it.
I don't like it. I already was skeptical at 2 films.
Same here. I mean, come on, dude. How much do you want to get out of this? You're just trying to get a cash grab.
Yeah, I feel exactly the same way. I don't think there's enough movie there.
No. It's a short story.
It's a very short story. Yeah,
boy, oh boy. 3 films? This is ridiculous. What do you got, Matt?
All right. According to the British Film Institute's much-respected greatest films poll, Alfred Hitchcock's 1958 Vertigo ends 50-year dominance of Orson Welles' masterpiece Citizen Kane for the number 1 spot. So Vertigo is now the best film ever made.
Whoa. I mean, how do you feel about these best of lists?
Yeah, you know I hate them. But I also think Psycho is a way better movie than Vertigo.
Oh, boy, tough call.
I got to agree. I mean, like, I don't know if Citizen Kane is the greatest film ever made, but Vertigo is definitely not.
It might not even be Hitchcock's best, is
right.
What you're saying.
No, yeah. Right.
Yeah,
that's what
tough
I'm saying.
Tough call. Hey, we're coming to the end of a jaw. We got to thank our guest, Steven Markley of the Red Eye. Where we can find your writings, also this blog.
Yeah, Off the Markley is at Red Eye, and my column's in every other Monday, and you can pick up my book, as said, many places. And The Great Dysmorphia will drop, quote-unquote, at some point August or September.
And we'll be sure to tweet that from the Cinema Jaw.
Oh, great,
Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, Steven, man. Thanks for coming on. We want to thank our sponsors, the new 400.
Yeah, and MoviePass, too.
And also, thanks to our producer, the best in the biz, Steve Mrazek.
He's wonderful.
He is. So until next week, check us out on Facebook.
Follow us on Twitter.
Keep on watching all the movies.